Sosho, Tao of the Three Treasures, Volume 1, Talks on Fragments from Lao Tzu's Tao Te Ching, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 6.
The first question. You have said that every gesture from a master is significant, and often the answer is given in what is not said rather than what is said. But often when you look or glance at me and I feel there is a message, I do not know how to identify the message without using my mind. And even when I do use my mind, I am not sure. The mind cannot be used. Once you use the mind, you have missed the point. Silence has to be understood in silence. No word message is to be understood wordlessly. If you try to understand through words and through minds, you will miss it. You will misunderstand it. Then your own mind has come in. Then you will interpret it. Then it will not be pure. It will not be the same. And if you ask then what to do, you ask a wrong question. The question of how arises from the mind. There is no question of how. You be silent. Don't do anything. Don't try to interpret it. Don't try in any way to interfere with it. Let it spread on your being. You may not be able to identify it right now because it is vaster than the mind. And all identifications are from the mind. You may not be able to know exactly what it is, but there is no need. You may not be able to decipher, decode the meaning of it, but there is no need. Let the wordless message reach to your wordless center. It is a deep contact, and the contact is the meaning. It is a deep penetration, and the penetration is the meaning. You pass by a rose bush and you look at a rose flower. What is the meaning? If you start thinking about the rose flower, the mind enters and the rose flower is lost. Then the mind creates a wall of words, thoughts, concepts, and then you cannot even see the rose flower there. Don't try to find the meaning. Meaning and a constant obsession with meaning is a disease of the mind. What is the meaning of a rose flower? There is no meaning. It flowers without any meaning. It needs no meaning to justify itself. It is justified in its being. You just let it be, and you be with it. Let the rose penetrate you. Let the rose spread its fragrance around you and within you. And suddenly, something within you is this, within your being. Something has arisen. The rose has done something in you. Even then you may not be able to know what the rose has done, but you will feel happier, blissful. You will feel there has been a contact with the unknown. You will feel that you have been given an opportunity to look into the unknown. You will feel the rose has become a window and a vast sky opened. There has been a crack in the wall of your mind and a ray of light penetrated. Don't bother about the meaning. You simply, when I'm looking at you, you look at me. When I'm giving my being, you give your being to me. Be available. Let it be a contact. It is not a communication. It is a communion. I am not communicating a certain message which can be deciphered, decoded. No. I am giving myself to you in that gesture. It is bigger than any meaning can be given to it. You are also bigger. If the contact happens, you will feel that boundaries have dissolved. For a moment, you were not there. For a moment, you were possessed by me. For a moment, you were possessed by me, and not only by me, but through me, by the whole. So whenever I look at you, whenever I want to penetrate in your eyes, whenever I knock at your door, at your heart, open the doors. Don't try to find out the meaning. In finding out the meaning, you will miss the meaning, because the contact is the meaning. A deep inner embrace is the meaning. The second question: my mind is in such a state of confusion that it is impossible to remain in the middle. Would not it be better to follow the mind in all its extremes so that I can experience the whole absurdity of it? The first part of the question: my mind is in such a state of confusion that it is impossible to remain in the middle. I am not saying that you remain in the middle. If you try to remain in the middle, you will never be in the middle. Middle is a balance. You cannot try to be there. You will have to lean to the left. You will have to lean to the right. Don't cling to any position. Be free. Between leaning to the left and leaning to the right, somewhere a subtle point arises in you. It is not out you. If you go to look outside, there is left and right. There is no middle. It is just like time. Space and time are together. Try to understand. If you look at the clock, there is past and there is future. There is no present. Your clock never says what is the present. It cannot say. Because the moment it has said, it is already the past. So the hands of the clock move from past to the future. There is no present in your clock. Cannot be. Present is not part of time. You have learned it in the schools and the universities. that present is part of time, that is absurd. Present is not part of time. You have heard so many times repeated that it has become a conditioning in your mind that time is divided into three tenses, past, future and time. No. Time has only two divisions, past and future. Then where is the present? Present is in you. If you look out, you will find past and future. If you look in, you will find the present. And always the present. There is no past and no future. There cannot be. Inwards you move and you move into eternity of the present. Outwards you move, either you move into past or you move into the future. And the same is true about space. In the space there is either left or right. If you lean towards the left, it is outside. If you lean towards the right, it is also outside. But if you gain a balance between the two, suddenly you are in. The middle point is within you. It is not a part of a space outside. In fact, present and the middle are together. Whenever you are in the present, you are in the middle. Whenever you are in the middle, you are in the present. Middle is not a position outside you. It is an inner phenomena just like present. So when I say, or Lao Tzu says, be balanced, we are not saying that make balance a static phenomena in your life. It cannot be static. You will have to continuously maintain it, moving to the left and the right. In that movement, sometimes you will pass the innermost point of your being and suddenly you will be in the middle. And suddenly you will find an implosion, not explosion. Implosion. Something inside implodes. Suddenly you are no more the same. Whenever you pass the position of the middle inside, you are no more the same. You become intensely alive. You become intensely innocent. You become intensely pure and holy. In that moment, there exists no darkness for you, no sin, no guilt. You are divine, you are a god. Whenever you can find that balance, and you cannot find it once and for all, no. Life is always a constant balancing, a continuity, a continuum. You cannot make it a commodity that you purchased once and it is always there in your house. No. If you are not aware, you will miss it again and again. This is the first part of your question. It is not a fixed point outside. You can do from either point, or either try to have a balance, gain a balance, moment to moment, into the opposites, between the opposites. Hate and love, anger and compassion. Go on balancing between the opposites. By and by you will come to feel the knack of it. Somewhere between hate and love it happens. I say somewhere. The point cannot be singled out. It is such a alive phenomena, you can not pinpoint it. It is just like butterflies flying in the garden. If you catch a butterfly and pin it down, it is dead. You can pin it down, but it is no more a butterfly. The life has left it. Just like a butterfly is the inner balance, you cannot pin it down. That's why it is indefinable, elusive. Says Lao Tse, the Tao that can be said is no more a Tao. The truth that can be uttered has already become untrue. Indian scriptures say that cannot be known by scriptures. Nae atma pravachanen labhya. You cannot understand that by any verbal communication. That is elusive because it is so alive. By the time you reach to it, the butterfly has gone. Just go and see. Move in the garden. You come nearer and nearer and the butterfly is getting ready to take off. When you were nearly at the point to catch it, it has left the flower. It is already on another tree. You cannot pin it down. If you can, it is dead. I was reading just yesterday one of the very perceptive poets of the West, Wallace Stevens. In one of his magazines he says, Aristotle is a skeleton. I liked it. Logic is a skeleton. Logic is always of the dead, of the death. It does not belong to life. Anything fixed is always dead. That's why I say marriage is a butterfly pinned down. Love is a alive phenomena. You can define marriage, you cannot define love. Even a court can decide what marriage is or not. But nobody can decide what love is. Marriage is legal. Love transcends all legality. Something of the unknown penetrates into the love, into the phenomena of love. Inner balance cannot be pinned down. You will have to find the neck of it. And you can find. Because if I can find, why not you? If Lao Tse can find, why not you? If one man has ever found the inner balance, the inner tranquility, the inner is still a small voice. The inner neck that passeth all understanding, then every human being has become capable. In Lao Tse is your future, your possibility. You can also do it. You say my mind is in such a state of confusion that it is impossible to remain in the middle. Don't try to remain in the middle. Forget about the middle. You just try to be balanced. Move into the opposites, but always remain alert so that someday you can find the balance between the two. And you are doing that. Only awareness is needed. Just a moment before you were happy, and another moment and you are unhappy. You have moved to the opposite. You must have passed through the middle. How can you move to the opposite without passing through the middle? Maybe you passed only for a fragment of a second, but that is not the point, but you passed it. If you had been a little alert, you would have known where the middle was. Just now you are so silent, and a single minute passes and your whole mind starts chattering. You must have passed the middle somewhere. When a man dies, he was alive just a moment before, then he is dead. If he is alert, he will find the middle, which is beyond death and life, which is deathless. But he is not alert. You have been dying many times, millions of times, in fact. You have passed the middle, but you are not alert. And every day you pass the middle many times, thousands times, compassion and anger. A man feeling so good and suddenly so bad. A man feeling so saintly in the morning. Look, people praying near the Ganges are in the temple. Look at their faces, so beautiful. Ugliest faces become beautiful when there is prayer. And then look them in the market. Even the most beautiful face looks ugly. They must have passed somewhere. From the temple to the market, there must have been a middle point. But they are not aware. So what is to be done? Don't try to be in the middle. I'm not saying that try a little anger and a little compassion together. No. I'm not saying to try to be in the middle, otherwise you will go mad. I'm saying move from one opposite to another, but move so alert that you can find the middle point inside you. The moment you find the middle point, for the first time you become the master of your life. Up to now you have been just a slave. For the first time you become awake. Up to now you have been fast asleep. And the second part of the question, would not it be better to follow the mind in all its extremes so that I can experience the whole absurdity of it? Nobody has ever been able to experience the whole absurdity of the mind. It is infinite. Nobody has ever been. You will not be able to experience the whole of it. It is very creative. Mind goes on creating new absurdities. You have been here in this existence so long, and yet you have not been able to experience the whole absurdity of it. You are not for the first time on this planet Earth. You have been here. I can see your ancient faces hidden behind your fresh skin. You are ancient ones. There was a teacher in Buddha's time in India. His name was Prakuddha Katyayan. He was a rare teacher. He always addressed his disciples as ancient ones. Even if a child will come to see Prabuddha Katyayan, he will say, "How are you, ancient one?" Because everyone is so old, older than the earth. Because the earth is not very old, just in fact, very young, adolescent, but you are older than the earth. You have been on other planets. You are older than the sun. Because you have been here since existing has been here. Otherwise, it is not possible. You cannot suddenly bubble up. How can you happen so suddenly? You have been here all the way. One of the most important American psychologists, William James, was writing a book. The book became a very important milestone in the history of psychology and religion. The name of the book is Varieties of Religious Experience. He traveled all around the world to collect material for the book. Many books have been written since then on religion, but no book has yet reached that peak. William James worked hard on it. He also came to India. He had to. If you are writing a book, then India becomes a must. If you are writing a book on religion, he came to India and he went to see a sage in the Himalayas. He does not give the name. In fact, sages have no names, so there is no need. He went to see a sage and he asked a question. He was reading an Indian scripture in which it is said that the earth is supported on 8 white elephants. So he was puzzled, a logician. So he asked the sage that this looks absurd. On what those 8 elephants are standing? How they are supported? The sage said, on another 8 white and bigger elephants. William James said, but that doesn't solve the problem on what those bigger white elephants are standing. The sage laughed and he said, elephants on elephants, elephants on elephants, to the very weighed down. You can go on asking, says the sage, and I will go on answering the same thing. To the very bottom. So Williams thought, once more the question can be asked, and on what on that bottom is being supported by what? The sage said, of course, bigger 8 elephants. It goes on and on. Of course, it has to be so. If you move backwards, you will find yourself again and again and again. Otherwise, how can you be here? You are supported by your past life. That's why you are here. And your past life is supported by another past life. That's why you were in your past life. And this goes on and on. And you cannot ask how I came for the first time. You never came for the first time. Because even before that you were. Even before the first time, you were supported by a past life. Elephants on elephants. Elephants on elephants. Hindus are really beautiful. They create absurd stories, but those stories have deep meanings and significances. You are here only because the whole past, not your past, the whole past of existence is supporting you. You are the whole past, and yet you have not been able to exhaust all the absurdities. Do you think ever it will be possible to exhaust all the absurdities of the mind? No, nobody has ever been able. If you become aware, even one day is enough. If you remain unaware, even whole millions of lives are not enough. If you become aware, even a single moment is enough to see the absurdity of the mind. And if you go on sleeping and snoring, then you can go on sleeping and snoring. That's how you have been in the past. The same you can be in the future. No, by sleeping you will never exhaust the absurdities of the mind. Don't hope. That is hopeless. That cannot be done. That is impossible. Become alert. In fact, it is time. It is already getting late. Become alert. And suddenly you can see. Because absurdities cannot be exhausted by experiencing. They can be exhausted by experience with awareness. Just by experience you will not be able to exhaust them. You love one woman and it comes to a still relationship, everything goes wrong. Then you start thinking of another woman. The mind says, this woman is not right for you. But there exists a right woman. You try to find. You got hooked with the wrong woman. That's why the problem has arisen. The problem has not arisen because of this woman. Remember, if you are alert, you will see the problem has arisen because of desire, not because of this woman. But the mind says, leave this woman, divorce, move to another. And with another the same happens. The mind again says, find out someone else. And you go on and on and on. And the mind will always hope that somebody will turn up someday and everything will be right and you will be in heaven. It is not going to happen. It has not happened. Otherwise, there was no need of religion, no need of yoga, no need of Tao. Then by and by, everybody would have come to the right life. But it never happens. But hope goes on winning on experience. And to the very end you go on hoping that someday, somehow, everything will be good. Hope is the base of all absurdities. And the existence is such that with ignorance and a sleeping mind there is no hope. Become alert. It happened, Alexander was coming towards India. He met Diogenes on the way. Diogenes was a rare being. If Diogenes had met Laozi, they both would have sat and laughed and laughed and laughed. Of the same quality. Alexander was passing, he heard that Diogenes is just nearby. So he went to see him. Even Alexander was impressed by the man. Even Alexander felt puny before him. He was a naked fakir. He had nothing. But his being was such, so magnetic, so powerful. Alexander was impressed, too much impressed. In fact, it is said that he was never impressed again by any other man. He asked the secret of it, and not having anything. And I am a world conqueror. Almost I have won the world. Just a little more is left. Soon I will finish. And you, a naked man, having nothing. What is the secret of your happiness? Diogenes is reported to have said that I renounced hope. That is the secret. And I tell you, he said, you also renounce otherwise you will always suffer. Alexander said, I will come to you to learn the secret, but not now. I am on the way, and half the world, more than half the world, I have won. The remaining part, I have to become a world conqueror, then I will come. Diogenes said, nobody has ever been a world conqueror. Something or other always remains to be done. The dream is never complete, and the desire is never fulfilled. If you really understand me, and if you really see that I am happy without bothering about winning the whole world, then you can also be happy without it. Logically, intellectually, Alexander understood it. But he said, I will come. This is not the right time for me. When he was leaving, Diogenes, Diogenes said, remember, you will die before you have ever conquered the world. Everybody has died and you cannot be an exception. And it happened. Alexander never reached back. He must have remembered Diogenes, that naked fakir, in the last moments. And then there has been a story. I cannot vouch for it. There has been a story that on the same day, Diogenes also died. And they met on the way, going to the other world, passing the river that flows between this world and that. They met on the river, and Diogenes started laughing loudly, and he said, look, do you remember, you fool? You died, and you died in the middle, and the victory was not complete. Just to keep his face, to save his face, Alexander also tried to laugh, but he could not laugh. Just to save his face, he said, yes, this is a strange meeting of an emperor and of a naked beggar in this river. It may not have happened before. It may not happen again. Diogenes laughed even more uproariously, and he said, you are right, but you don't understand who is the emperor and who is the slave. And who is the emperor and who is the beggar, that you don't know exactly. There you are wrong, otherwise you are right, meeting of an emperor with a beggar. I am the emperor and you are the beggar. And you were begging for the whole world. You are the biggest beggar ever. And I lived like an emperor. And look what has happened to your empire. Now even Alexander was naked, because everything has to be left on this shore. And he was feeling very shy and awkward, embarrassed. But Diogenes was not embarrassed. He said, knowing this well, that someday one has to become naked, I had thrown those clothes smartly. Now look how embarrassed you are feeling, and before God, I will stand laughing. And you will feel guilty and embarrassed and everything. Everything wrong around you. There is no possibility to adjust the absurdities. Even Alexander's never adjust them. If you want to adjust them, the only way is to become aware. The more aware you are, the more absurdities look like absurdities. When they look like absurdities, when you see them, they are absurd, simply you stop. You don't move in them. There is no need to renounce anything in the world. One has to be just aware. and things which are useless, meaningless, drop by themselves on their own accord. Third question, every religion degenerates into a moralistic institution. You commend Lao Tse because no religion could grow from his way. How can those who love you avoid such an institutional degeneration of your inspiration? If you start avoiding, you have already started creating it. Don't bother about it. If it is going to happen, it is going to happen. If it is not going to happen, it is not going to happen. You don't bother about it. Because if you start that how to avoid it, you have already taken it for granted that it is going to be there. You have already become self-conscious about it, and that will help to create it. Buddha tried hard so that his religion remains an alive phenomena and not a dead institution. He tried hard, but he failed. The harder he tried, the more people tried to create an institution around him. Krishnamurti is trying hard, and he will fail, because this is the law. Why you are trying so hard? You must be deep down afraid that it is going to happen. And if even Krishnamurti thinks that it is going to happen, it is going to happen. I have been talking to you many times about the law of reverse effect. It is a very deep psychological law. Do something and just the reverse happens. That's the whole teaching of Lao Tse. He says, talk about order and there will be disorder. Try to make people moral and there will be immorality. Try that people should be good and they will be bad. And you all know that this happens. Try that your child should be saintly and you will create the first revolt in him against you. He will go against you. He will do exactly what you wanted him not to do. It never happened with Lao Tse because he was never worried about it. If it happens, it is okay. What you can do? When I am gone, I am gone. Whatsoever happens, it is none of my business. So don't be worried about it. If it happens, it had to happen. If it doesn't happen, good. If it happens, that too is good. Who we are to take the responsibility for the future? Who we are to decide for the future? No, it cannot be done. Simply drop the whole idea. Don't be worried. If you drop the idea completely and you are not worried, don't try to create it and don't try to avoid it. While I am here, be with me. Celebrate with me. Delight in me. Let me help you. Allow me. That's all. When I am gone and you are gone, what happens? How can we decide it? And why we should worry about it? While we are here, we should use the opportunity the door that has opened, the path that has become visible for you. You trod on it. You walk on it. Whether people create an institution out of it or not, that is for them to decide. And nothing can be done about it right now. For future, never create any worry, because your very worry will create the reverse effect. Have you watched? If you travel in a train, just have a look around. The man who is traveling without ticket, you can judge who is traveling without ticket. The law of reverse effect, because he is constantly worried about the ticket checker. He looks afraid. He looks worried. Whenever somebody enters in the compartment, he looks startled. You can simply watch who has come without ticket. He is creating his own difficulty around him. And sometimes it happens that you have purchased a ticket and it has fallen out of your pocket and you are not aware. You don't know that you don't have the ticket. Then you walk and you sit as if you have the ticket. Nobody can judge. Nobody can catch hold of you. Even a ticket checker will not come to you. He knows that he must be having the ticket. People are always surprised that when they have tickets, nobody comes to check. And when they don't have the tickets, suddenly the ticket checker comes, because they start becoming aware of this small law that you can judge who is the culprit. There is no difficulty about it, because he cannot be natural. He creates his own unnatural vibrations around him. Immediately, the ticket checker reaches to him. Don't bother. You are here. The phenomena is alive right now, vibrating, talking to you, penetrating you, helping you. You just delight in it. And if you delight in it, and if you become yourself a lighted phenomena inside, others will delight in you. An alive religion is alive because people are still enlightened in it. People are still aware in it. If you become aware with me, you can help others to be aware with you. It is a chain reaction. Once awareness disappears, the chain disappears, a gap comes, an interval when nobody is alert and nobody is awakened, then religion is dead. Then it becomes a sect, Hindu, Mohammedan, Jaina. Then it becomes a church, then rituals, then just dead gestures. But nothing can be done about it. Only one thing can be done about it, and that is, you don't bother, because you can waste your time thinking about it. You just live me and allow me to live within you. Soon you will be able that through your lighted candle, other candles can be lighted. Create chains and they will move on their own. And never think of the morrow. Future is not a concern at all. Only present is. You say, I am an emptiness. Since being here, I am beginning to feel my own center. How does the center exist in emptiness? It exists. I cannot explain to you how or why. It is a simple fact. Just as science says H2O is water. Two parts hydrogen, one part oxygen. Two atoms of hydrogen, one atom of oxygen. And the combination is water. You cannot ask why. Why not three parts hydrogen, one part oxygen? Why not four parts oxygen, one part hydrogen? Why H2O? Why not otherwise? The science will shrug its shoulders. It will say, we don't know. It is how it is. Yes. Your inner being is an emptiness and yet a center exists. Have you seen a cyclone? In summer days in India there are cyclones. Whirlwinds. Go and watch when the whirlwind has gone. It has disturbed every particle of dust around, but just in the center there is no disturbance. Even to a whirlwind, a center exists. Even to a cyclone, a center exists. Even to emptiness, a center exists. One comes upon it. It is a fact of existence. Know how to it. One small boy was walking with D.H. Lawrence in a garden and he suddenly asked why trees are green. And D.H. Lawrence said, trees are green because they are green. Nothing more can be said about it. All explanations are useless because you can say something that because of this, because of that. But that too again brings the same question, why? It is absurd that a center exists to emptiness. It is illogical. It is irrational. But life is irrational. One has to accept life. Life is in no way to be forced to accept your logic or reason. It happens every day in science. When for the first time Einstein said that everything is relative, even time is relative. the whole old world of science was disturbed. People started asking why, how. One very absurd thing Einstein said, and that is that if a traveler goes into the infinite space on a journey in a vehicle which moves faster than light, light moves in 1 second 186,000 miles per second. If a vehicle moves faster than light, or even equal to light, and your sun goes on a travel of this space, comes back after 20 years, he will be of the same age. If he had gone 25 years of age, he will remain 25 years of age. His friends would have become 50 years old here on the earth, but he will remain of the same age. It is absurd. People started asking what logic is there. Einstein said, I cannot say what logic is there, but it is so. In such a tremendous speed, you cannot age. It is just like at 100 degrees the water evaporates, that's all. In such a tremendous speed, you cannot age. You will remain the same. And even more absurd, if the speed can be doubled, you will come smaller than you had gone. If you had gone 20 years of age, and after 10 years you come, you will be 10 years of age. You will move backwards in time. Because Einstein said, aging depends on the speed. On the speed of the earth. Earth is moving with a particular speed. On that speed depends your aging. Impossible to believe, because contradictory to all logic. Then physics penetrated into matter, and suddenly one day they found there is no matter. So they had to say that matter consists of emptiness. They had to say that matter is nothing but dense emptiness. This looks illogical. How can emptiness be dense? And how can this pillar be created out of dense emptiness? But now physics says it is so. And nature and existence does not follow our logic. It has its own ways. And we cannot force our logic on it. Our logic has to follow its ways. And the same is true about inner space. Of course, logic says how emptiness can have a center. Logically, it cannot have. When for the first time I had come to that center, the same question has arisen to me also. That how emptiness can have a center. To have a center, something is needed, but it has, and it doesn't listen to our logic. Accept it, and don't create any logical problem in your mind, because that is not going to help. Life is illogical. You are here, have you any logic to say why you are here? If you were not here, could you claim that why you are not here? things simply are. Nothing can be claimed, nothing can be pushed, nothing can be projected, nothing can be asked. When you grow into this awareness that things simply are, then a deep acceptance happens. Then even if they are illogical, you accept. You don't fight, you float. You even don't swim. You simply be in a let go. And by, more and more mysteries are revealed. That's why religion says that life is a mystery, not a problem. A problem can be solved. A mystery can never be solved. The more you solve it, the more mysterious it becomes. The more you know it, the more you feel has to be known. The more you come nearer, the more you feel you are far away. Upanishads say God is far and near both. Why? Because the nearer you go, you feel far away He is. You almost touch Him, then you feel far away. You almost penetrate Him, you are almost in His heart, but still the mystery is not dissolved. On the contrary, the mystery has become more mysterious. And that is the beauty of it. Just think of a world where all mysteries are solved. How boring it will be. Just think of a world which is absolutely logical, rational, mathematical. How boring and monotonous it will be. Then there will be no possibility for poetry. And there will be no possibility for romance. There will be no possibility for love. And there will be no possibility at all for any meditation. Meditation is to enter into the mystery. Love is also to knock at the same door in a different way. Prayer is also to allow the mystery and not to struggle it with the mind. Everything is beautiful because everything is mysterious, and you cannot come to the bottom of it. Analyze if you want to analyze, but every analysis will create more problems, more mysteries. The answer, the final answer, cannot be found. And it is good that it cannot be found. If it is found, then what? Then the very meaning and significance is lost. I am not a philosopher, not in the least. I am just a poet at the most. I look at life and accept its facticity. If it makes 2 plus 2, 4, okay. If it makes 2 plus 2, 5, okay. If it makes 2 plus 2, 3, okay. I have okayed it. I have said yes to it. And this is what to be religious means to me, to say yes. It is so. The fifth question is, Carlos Castaneda's guru, Don Juan, an enlightened master? If there is someone like Don Juan, he is enlightened. He is like a Buddha or a Lao Tse. but there is nobody like Don Juan. Carlos Castaneda's books are 99% fiction. Beautiful, artful, but fiction. As there are scientific fictions, there are spiritual fictions also. There are third-rate spiritual fictions and first-rate. If you want third-rate, then Lobsang Rempa. If you want first-rate, then Carlos Castaneda. He is a great master. A fiction. But I say 99% fiction. 1% truth is there, hidden here and there. You will have to find it. It is good even to read it as a fiction. Don't bother about Rempas, because they are rubbish. Created by a mediocre mind. And of course created for mediocre minds. But Carlos Castaneda is worth reading. When I say fiction, I don't mean don't read him. I mean read him more carefully. Because 1% truth is there. You will have to read it very carefully. But don't swallow it completely, because it is 99% fiction. It can help your growth. It can create a desire to grow. That's why I say it is beautiful. But it can hinder growth also if you take it on its surface value. This man Carlos is really crafty, very clever. Rarely it happens, such cleverness. Because it is very easy to create a scientific fiction. Not much imagination is needed. But to create a spiritual fiction is very, very difficult. One needs a great artistic and imaginary mind. Because things you don't know, how can you even imagine? That's why I say 1% of truth is there. On that 1% of truth, he has been able to create a big edifice. On that 1% of truth, he has been able to project much imagination. On that one iota of truth, he has made the whole house beautiful palace, a fairy tale. But that 1% truth is there, otherwise it is impossible. So 1% Don Juan must be there somewhere or other. He must have met somebody. Maybe his name is Don Juan or not, that is not material. That doesn't matter. He has come across a being superior than himself. He has come across a being who knows some secrets. Maybe he has not realized them, maybe he has stolen them. Maybe he has just borrowed them from someone else. But he has met somebody who has somehow some facts of his spiritual life. And this man has been able to create imagination around it. And the imagination becomes possible if you use drugs as a help. Very easy. Because drugs are nothing but an aid to imagination. This man has come across some being who knows something, and then through drugs, LSD and others, he has been projecting that small truth into imaginary worlds. Then his whole fiction is created. It is a drug trip. But a good experiment in itself. When I say all these things, I am not condemning Carlos. In fact, I have come to love the man. It is rare flight of imagination. And if it is 100% fiction, then Carlos himself is a rare being. If he has not come across at all anybody, then he must have that 1% of reality in himself. Because it is impossible. You can build a house on a foundation. Even an imaginary house needs at least a foundation in reality. You can make a house of cards. But at least the ground, a solid ground is needed. That much is true. So read, because you will have to read. Every age has its own fictions, romances. One has to pass through them. You will have to read. You cannot escape Carlos Castaneda. But remember that only 1% is true, and you have to find it. If you have been reading Gurdjieff's books, particularly All and Everything, then you can become artful. How to find the truth? How to sort out chaff from wheat? If you have not read All and Everything, it is good beginning. First you should read All and Everything of George Gurdjieff, and then you can read Carlos Castaneda's books. It is very difficult training to read Gurdjieff. In fact, not more few dozens people exist in the world who have read his book All and Everything completely. It is difficult. It is 1,000-page book. And he is a master of hiding things. He goes on saying irrelevant things, useless things, spinning tales within tales, and then hundreds of pages and one line of truth, but that is worth seeking. It is a diamond. 100 pages rubbish, but then comes a diamond. It is worth. If you can find the diamonds into Gurdjieff, that will be a great training for you. And then you can find in Carlos Castaneda what is true and what is not true. Otherwise, you can become a victim of a fiction. And I think many Americans particularly are roaming in Mexico in search of Don Juan. Foolish. Like Tilopa and Bodhidharma, do you think you will have to leave India to find a suitable successor? You fools. Can't you see I have already left India? I am no more here in India. And the last question. Chinmay has been asking this question continuously for many days, and I have been avoiding. But now it is time. He has been asking all enlightened masters bald. And now I cannot avoid it anymore, because in the effort to become bald, he has saved. There exists no relationship. So don't try to be bald. Bald people are very clever. They create rumors about themselves. One rumor they have created all around the world, that they are potentially more sexual than anybody else. Of course, bald people are not so sexually attractive. They have to create a rumor around themselves. All over the world, in all countries, the rumor exists that bald people are more sexual, more potential sexually than anybody else. This is a trick. But now, to create another rumor that bald people are the only ones who become enlightened will be too much. Enough for today.